Welcome to Shir Maral Guraya Parshas Bo'era. Wanted to see a comment of the Maral this week that not only addresses a difficult to understand Rashi, but also lays out the Maral's theory of how the Makos are divided up. We know that there are 10 Makos, 7 of which are described in Parshas Bo'era, and exactly what the nature of the grouping, the progression of the Makos, why certain Makos took place when they did, you know, is a topic of discussion, so the Maral will weigh in terms of helping us to understand this Rashi. So towards the end of the Sedra and Perek Tess, Pasuk Yudalid, the Ribbono Shel Olam is sending Moshe to speak to Paro. It's right before the Makos of Bara, right before the hail comes down. And Moshe Rabbeinu was told to tell Paro, "Ki b'pam hazos, you should know, Paro, this time, ani shaleach et kol magefosai libcha. I'm going to be sending all of my plagues into your heart, uva'avodecha, uve'amecha. I'm going to be sending them against your servants, against your people. Ba'avur teidaki ein komani b'chol ha'aretz. And when I get through sending all of my plagues into your midst, you will know that there is no one like me in all of the land." What does it mean that at this time I will be sending all of my plagues into your midst? So, says Rashi, Lamadnu mikan, we see from here, Shemakas b'choros shkula kineged kol hamakos. We see here that the plague of the firstborn is equal to all of the other makos, all of the other plagues put together. And you just read the Rashi and you say, what? How does that flow out of the pasuk at all? So we're not going to be reading about Makos Becharos until next week's Sedra, although. So the Ribbono Shel Olam was about to send the Makah of Baruch, of hail, against the Egyptians. And he describes the Makah of Baruch, of hail, as, I'm going to send all of my plagues into your midst, into your heart. So says Rashi, oh, so we see from here that the Makos Becharos, the plague of the firstborn, is equal to all the other plagues. Who was talking about the plague of the firstborn? It has nothing to do with anything that's being discussed here in the pasuk. So the Maral opens up his discussion of this Rashi with the Kasha. Kasha, Ma'inyan Makos Becharos L'kan, Sharamas L'chakos L'kan Makos Becharos. What on earth does Makos Becharos have to do with the discussion over here? And then he brings the Mefarshim, some explain, the Mizrahi quotes this from some of the Balei Tosfos, that Makos Becharos is Miloshen Bikurim. In other words, the way we should punctuate the phrase is not really Makos Becharos, the plague of the firstborn, but Makos Bakuros, the plague which will strike the first fruits. The Hainu Kol Ha'Peros Shehayu Omdim BeBikurim Shelohem Nilka. And if we're going to read about the very end of the Sedra, it's described when the Barad actually came down, when the plague of hail came down, so all of those crops which had begun to emerge from the ground were stricken by the hail. So therefore, that's what Rashi is saying over here. We see from here that the Makah of Barad, that the Makah of hail, the plague of hail, Makas Bakuros, that was struck down the first growing fruits, so the first growing grains, is shkula kineged kol hamakos. It's equal in power and severity to all of the other plagues put together. It's not talking about Makos Becharos, it's really talking about the Makos of Baruch. So, says the Maral, v'ani omer ki pirush ze lo yitachin klal. This cannot be shocked in Rashi in any way. Again, Maral is not shy about arguing with the Mizrahi. He does it frequently. But even in this case, where the Mizrahi is quoting Balei Tosfos, you know, who presumably were a little bit closer to the time when Rashi was actually written, you know, so you might say, okay, so maybe they had a Mesorah, maybe they had a tradition that this is what Rashi actually did. Even in this case, the Maral is not shy to argue with the Mizrahi and by extension the Balei Tosfos. So first of all, why is this an impossible shot, says the Maral? First of all, Rashi Pirish Papasha Shmos Eitzel Himni Horeg Bin Chadu Chorecha Ki Makos Becharos Ki Yakosha Ubar Hishvat Chila. Last etc., when the Ribbono Shel Olam first appears to Moshe Rabbeinu, he says, go tell Paro you know, send forth the Jewish people. If not, I'm going to kill your firstborn. And it was already from the beginning. The Ribbono Shel Olam was saying the apex of all of these plagues is going to be the Makas Becharos. And Rashi there explains that Makas Becharos is the most severe of all of the Makos. And indeed, you know, in a sense, you almost don't even need Rashi, you know, to say that way. Again, if you ask the average person, what would you prefer? You know, would you prefer to have hail come down and destroy your crops? Or would you prefer, Rahman al-Islam, you know, to lose your firstborn? I think just about everybody would say, you know, let the hail come and destroy all my crops and do whatever it's going to be. But, you know, to have one of my children, you know, Rahman al-Islam, die, you know, that I'm not willing to do, you know. So I think a person intuitively says, the Makas Becharos is going to be the worst of all the plagues that was visited upon Egypt. But in case, you know, you're not willing to trust your own intuition, says the Maharal, it's a Rashi. It's a Rashi back at the Esri Sedra. The Makas Becharos was the most severe of everyone. If we accept the interpretation of the Mizrahi of the Rashi we just read, that really Rashi is saying over here that Makas Bara, but the plague of hail, was equal to all of the other Makos combined, so then we end up having a contradiction within Rashi. Rashi in this Mishnah is saying that Bara, but the hail, is the strongest and the most severe of all the Makos, and Rashi in this Mishnah is saying that Makas Becharos is the most severe of all the Makos. So that's question number one. Question number two, if you talk and see a maybe a way of Makos school of Kenegit Kol HaMakos, from a perspective of, from the Ribbono Shel Olam's perspective in terms of trying to get the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, it doesn't make sense to first send Barad, which according to this interpretation is the strongest of all the Makos, and then only afterwards send the Makos Becharos. You keep your strongest weapon, for last. That's going to be the last one in your arsenal. And it doesn't make sense from Paro's perspective. So Paro didn't let the Jews go after Makas Barad, even though according to this interpretation of Rashi, it's the most severe and the most powerful of all the Makos. But somehow after Makas Becharos, which we're now saying is less severe than the Mako, than the plague of Barad of hail, So Paro did let the Jewish people go. That's counterintuitive. It doesn't make sense that he would hit the Egyptians with this incredible whammy first, and afterwards, when he gives them the lighter plague, that's when he would actually let them go. That doesn't make sense. Right? So I think one could add to the kasha of the kashas of the Maharal, why on earth would Rashi refer to the Makas Barad as the Makas Bakuros? I mean, given that especially, if that's what Rashi really meant, it's so easy to confuse that with Makas Becharos, right? Why pick this poetic language, you know, the plague of the first growing fruits? Why not just call the plague by its name? We all refer to it as Barad, you know, whoever referred to it as the Makas Bakuros, you know, the way which is being suggested over here. Therefore, Lachain, therefore, says the Maharal, in his opinion, you know, we can't accept this perspective of the Mizrahi and the Bali Atosis that somehow Rashi is talking over here about, you know, the Makas Becharos. It must be that Rashi is saying that we see from here that Makas Becharos, as we normally understand it, is the most severe of all of the Makos, and indeed is equal in severity to all of the other Makos put together. But then, of course, we go back to the original question. The Pasuk is not talking about Makas Becharos. The Pasuk is saying, you know, I'm about to send Bara against you. So how do you relate this in any way to the Makas Becharos? So it goes on the Maharal to give two interpretations. All right, we'll start with the first interpretation, which is a little bit more localized. And then the second interpretation of the Maharal broadens the discussion of it and helps us focus on understanding the Makos as a whole. The first chapter the Maharal says is to tell us that the words Ki Batam Hazos, at this time, is not meant to be understood in the narrow sense of right now, but rather Ki Bapam Hazel should be rendered in the near future. I will be sending a Makkah which is equal to all the other Makkos combined. Right? What throws us off is that you figure Ki Bapam Hazel at this time refers to something which is going to happen imminently, which in this case is the Makkah of Barav, is the plague of hail. The sense of Maral, if we just interpret that phrase a little bit more loosely, in the near future, Bapam Hazos, you know, in the near future, he will be sending the Makkas Bukharos, and the Makkas Bukharos is going to be equal in power to all of the other Makkos combined. Right. So, first of all, you really say that Ki Bapam Hazos means in the near future, as opposed to in the here and now, right? So, he says in Iran, yeah, you can say that, right? So, where do we see that you can say that? So, says in Iran, again, if you look back in the last week's time, so, the passage that we quoted before that speaks about the Makkas Bukharas, which is Perek Dalid, Pasuk of Gimel, right? So, Rabbanu Shalom says to Moshe Rabbeinu, go to Paro. Go to Paro and tell him my firstborn son is Yisrael. I hereby say to you, send forth my son, the Klal Yisrael, so they can worship me. That's my English alpha, but you refuse to send him forth. Behold, I am killing your firstborn son. Present tense. Behold, I am killing your firstborn son. So, if you read the pasuk on the simple level, that also seems to imply a certain immediacy. Behold, I am killing. You're not going to let my children go. I am killing your firstborn son. But clearly, you know, the Makkas Bukharos at that point was not imminent at all. Right, it was months before the Makkas Bukharos was going to take place. Some would say, and depending on how you figure out the chronology, it might have been a full year from the time that this was communicated to Moshe Rabbeinu until the Makkas Bukharos took place. So he neonochi, behold, you know, I am going to do this, or hinini, you know, I'm about to do this, doesn't always imply that I'm really about to do this. I'm eventually about to do this. Again, so you say Bapam Haba, right? So, you know, in modern day Hebrew we'd say, you know, next time, you know, Bapam Haba, but it's not even Bapam Haba either, because the next Makkah, you know, is going to be out of there. It's not going to be Makkas Bukharos. So see, Bapam Hazos, you know, means at this point in time, broadly speaking, you know, not in 20 years from now, Bapam Hazos, you know, at this stage in our history, you know, a tremendous Makkah is coming. Okay, so the language could be understood, you know, in the near future I will be sending a tremendous Makkah against you. But that still begs the question, why mention that now? You know, at the point where the immediate Makkah which is going to come is Barav, is the hail. So why mention right now before the Makkah of Barad that there is going to be a Makkas Bukharos which is going to be coming in the very near future? It seems like a very odd thing to do. Goes on the Maral to try to explain this as follows. Right, so just before we see the Maral, we have to consider the very next pasuk in the Chumash. Right, so the pasuk says, in the near future, I will send all of my, you know, something equivalent to all of my plagues into your midst. In order that you should know that there is none like me in all of the land. And then the pasuk goes on to say, Ki ato shalachti es yodi, because you should know now I send forth my hand. And I struck you and your people with the cattle plague, the devil. And you literally were destroyed from the land. However, I kept you alive for this purpose. In order to show you my strength, in order to tell over the strength of my name throughout all of the land. What does that pasuk mean? The pasuk is referencing the Makkah of Deva, the fact that the Egyptians were removed from the land. But what does all that mean? What is HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying over here exactly? So explain, first of all, just let's just see Rashi on this next pasuk. Rashi comments, Ki'ilu Rav Sisi, what the pasuk means to say is, Hashem is telling Paro, had I wanted to, Kishahaisa Yavi B'miknecha, when I struck your cattle, Shikisa Badeva, when I struck them with the cattle plague, Shilachtiha, Vikesios Kavias Amchayu Rehemos, I could have stricken you too. I mean, the same way I could bring a plague on the animals, I could bring a plague on you and, you know, your people and you, all human beings. And it had this on in order. And you would have disappeared from the land. In other words, the Makkah of Deva could have been extended to human beings and you all could have died. However, I kept you alive to show you my wonders. What's the point over here? So explain the Maral as follows. Paro walked away after the Makkah of Deva thinking God has a feeling to how much he's going to afflict us with plagues. Obviously the fact that, in Paro's mind, obviously the fact that God afflicted our cattle with a plague, but he didn't afflict the human beings with any kind of plague, means that either HaKadosh Baruch Hu won't or maybe can't go that extra mile and bring death upon the Egyptian people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu either won't or can't, you know, go that far. No, he can deal with animals, but he's not going to allow death to go into the human camp itself. Right after Deva, you had Shin, you had the boils, which did afflict the persons of the Egyptian people. Yeah, okay. So God can make the Egyptians sick, but he's not actually going to cause them to die. Right? And, you know, that was Paro's takeaway from the Makkah of Deva. Says the Rabbanu Shalom to Paro, no, you are mistaken. I could have wiped you all out with Deva. You would have been all gone. Why did I keep you alive? Because I wanted to show you even more incredible and miraculous things to help you realize even more thoroughly how, you know, incredible and how all-powerful the Ribbono Shel Olam actually is. And I kept you alive so you should realize, you know, who you're dealing with. Yinelo, says the Maral, the Ribbono Shel Olam said, I'm going to give you a little taste of what's going to come. First, we're going to have Bara, right, the plague of hail. Hail itself is a spectacular plague which is going to be brought upon the Egyptian people. Again, as Rashi is going to detail later on in the Parsha, the hail itself is a nace to soch nace. You know, there's the miracle of the hail coming down, but there's also the miracle of Eish Nislakachas to soch habara. There's fire in the midst of the hail. The fire and the ice are coexisting with one another and coming down. Clearly something supernatural and out of the ordinary is associated with the bara. So I'm keeping you alive so you should see A, the bara, and you should recognize through how unique and supernatural it is, how incredible the Ribbono Shel Olam is. But that's just an appetizer. You should know that after the bara, there's ultimately going to come a plague which is going to be equal to all of the plagues put together, and that's going to be the Makas Tuchoros. So I'm keeping you alive so you should see God's greatness and God's unparalleled power that will be manifest first through the Bara, but then afterwards through the Makas Tuchoros, which is really going to take it to the next level, and you'll see the glory of God. You'll see why I kept you around after Deva, not because I couldn't have killed you, not because I didn't want to kill you. I wanted you to see, you know, all of the incredible things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was doing. So why mention Makas Bechoros by Baruch? So says the Maral in conclusion in this first interpretation, because the Makas Baruch gives a little bit of the taste of that which will fully be brought out through the Makas Bechoros, i.e., you know, a recognition of the greatness of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and Paro will understand in retrospect why God kept the Egyptians alive after the Matzah of Tevah and didn't just kill them off together with the animals, because there are incredible things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to show the Egyptian people. That's the first shot that the Maharal says in trying to understand why Makkos Bechoros would be referenced here, you know, notwithstanding the fact that we're about to talk about the Makkos Bechoros. However, goes on the Maharal then to say a second shot. Right? And the second shot is a little bit more far-reaching in trying to understand the Makkos as a whole. The Oyesh Bechoros Loshen Batam Hazos Kimashmo. The second interpretation, the phrase Batam Hazos, at this time, doesn't mean sometime in the immediate future, but it means right now. And the Maharal goes on to explain that we know famously from the Pesach Haggadah that the Makkos are divided up into three sections. Tzitzach, Adash, Ve'achav. Right? Rabbi Yehuda famously tells us in the Haggadah Shel Pesach that the first three Makkos, the second three Makkos, and the last four Makkos are considered to be three different sections. So now, with the beginning of, with the Makkah of Barad, we're now beginning the final section of the Makkos. And that final section of the Makkos is going to culminate with Makkos Bechoros. So in other words, Bapam Hazos, Amishalech, Komagekosai, Elidacha, at this time I am initiating the final stage of the Makkos, which will culminate with a Makkah that's equal to all the Makkos together. The truth is, I think between the two Pshatim, I don't know about you, I hear this one a little bit more, for whatever that's worth, you know? Hamazos means right now. Not right now, but we're beginning the final stage of the Makkos, which is going to culminate with Makkos Bechoros. So then the question becomes, how do you distinguish the difference, the qualitative difference, between Tzach and Adash and Be'achav? So he goes on to say as follows. For the first three Makkos, Paro didn't believe that the Makkos came from God altogether. He didn't believe in God, or he didn't believe that God had the ability to perform supernatural miracles in any way. That's why we find the first three Makkos, Paro calls them the Chatumim, the sorcerers of Mitzrayim. He says, you guys do this also, this is all trickery. You know, you don't have a God who can turn the Nile into blood. My sorcerers can do that also. You don't have a God who can produce frogs. My sorcerers can do that also. Right? And it's only after the third Makkah of Kinim, right, of rice, that the Chatumim basically throw up their hands and they say, Espa Elokim him. This is the finger of God. Klomar me'eis Hashem ha'makko. That was, you know, the Chatumim. The magicians say to Paro, we can't duplicate it. This is really divine work. Right? So through the first three Makkos, it's demonstrated to Paro, there is a God. God can perform supernatural miracles, and they cannot simply be mimicked by the magicians of Paro. This is something which only God can carry out. However, even though the first three Makkos have established that there is a God and that he's capable of changing nature, they didn't believe that God was able to have the kind of precision, the kind of hashkacha prophets, you know, here in the world, to be able to pinpoint and send the Makkos to this group of people and not to that group of people. And I will say, wait a minute, but at least according to Chazal, at least, the first three Makkos only afflicted the Egyptians and did not afflict the Jewish people. If you recall, it's actually interesting from the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra argues with Chazal on that, at least in terms of Dom. He says that the Pasuk of Pshat, the simple Pshat, is that even the water that belongs to the Jews turns into blood. Again, that's the impression you get from the simple shot from the Pesukim. That it's only later on, by the Makkah of Aruf, that the Ribbono Shel Olam starts, you know, speaking in terms of that the wild animals are going to afflict the Egyptians, but not afflict the Jewish people. But according to Chazal, you know, Rashi is certainly working within Chazal, the Maral is working within Chazal. According to Chazal, the first three Makos also only afflict the Jewish people. How could the Egyptians have thought that, you know, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have the ability to pinpoint and to limit the Makos to one group of people as opposed to another group of people? So in the Maral's comments on Chumash, he doesn't really address this directly. However, Rabbi Hartman quotes in a footnote that in the Gvuros Hashem, the Gvuros Hashem is the Maral's work on Pesach and the Haggadah of Pesach. In the Gvuros Hashem, where the Maral has a similar passage, he says it's true that the first three Makos distinguish between the Jews and the Egyptians, but it wasn't immediately clear to the Egyptians that was purposeful from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They attributed it to more of a fluke than anything else. Right? So why are there frogs that are afflicting the Egyptians and not the Jews? I don't know. That's where the frogs happen to migrate. You know? Why is the blood only you know, in the Egyptian part of town, not in the Jewish part of town? Again, leaving aside the interpretation of Chazal, that if a Jew were to give water to an Egyptian, you know, it would turn into blood, right? So, why is it only in the Egyptian part of town, not in the Jewish part of town? Okay, I guess, you know, that's where, you know, that's where it happened to fall, but, you know, it's not a purposeful thing. It's not something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu planned down. So, although the first three Makos established the existence of God, they didn't establish to the same extent God's ability to engage in Hashkacha Pratis and to limit the plagues to certain areas and focus on other areas. If you see with the Adash Makos, Arov, Dever, and Shchin, the emphasis of the Pesukim is placed on the idea that this is only going to afflict the Egyptians and not the Jews. The Santi Fedus, Ben Amilu, Ben Amecha, I'm going to place a barrier of protection between my people and the Egyptian people, and the Arov only afflicts the Egyptians, not the Jews. The Dever only afflicts the Egyptians and not the Jews. And that point is made very graphically for the Egyptians. And it's for that reason that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu describes those middle set of Makos, the Adash, it says, when man replaces Eretz Goshen, I will set aside Eretz Goshen as being distinct from Mitzrayim on that day. When man teda, ki ani Hashem bekerev ha'aretz. You will know that I am God in the midst of the land. What's in the midst of the land? So says the Maral, they already realized that there was a God. But the idea that God could micromanage bekerev ha'aretz, that he could micromanage the events and what was going on down here on earth, to such an extent that, you know, these people could have the plague, those people would not have the plague, that was a power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they only really appreciated in the course of the Adash. Alright, so let's just sum up, we'll dive in Myers, and then we'll pick up and finish this Maral. According to the Maral, the purpose of the Tzach is to, the first three plagues was to establish that there's a God. The Egyptians did not believe in God, they did not believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they didn't believe in God's power. That was established through the Tzach. Hadash, they already know that there is a God, but the purpose of Hadash is to establish God's Hashkocha, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can send the plague and can control the plague, which was something that the Egyptians didn't quite believe either, even after they saw that God had the ability to send the plague altogether. They doubted HaKadosh Baruch Hu to direct and shape the plague towards a particular group. If you think about the matter, we'll see the significance of the Achav, the last of the three sections of plagues, and you know, we'll get the whole picture from the Maral. Okay? Right, but it was only after Kinim that they said, Esra Elohim, oh, I guess this does come from God. Right, so Kinim, you know, the third in the first section kind of runs through. Welcome to the second half of the Shir Maral Gurari and Pashas Vo'era. We saw that the Maral was speaking about the division of the Makos into three basic units, the Tzach, Hadash, Ve'achav, the first three, the second three, and then the last four. And so far we saw how, according to the Maral, each of the segments, each of the units is supposed to convey a distinct message to the Egyptians. So far we've seen two out of the three. The Tzach conveyed to the Egyptians that there is a God, that he can do supernatural things, right? That was something they did not believe in. Hadash conveyed to the Egyptians the idea that God can control and can micromanage events in this world, so that one group can be afflicted with a plague and another group spared the plague. In other words, that there's a degree of hashkacha pratis, not just like God can bring things into the world, but that he can't control them. He can bring plagues into the world and focus them so that, you know, in this particular case, the Egyptians will be afflicted, the Jews not. And says the Maral, that idea is hinted at in the Pesukim as well, with regard to the Tzach. So all that the Egyptians are able to conclude is Esfa Elokimi. We see that it's the finger of God. Hayadash, it says, L'man teidak yani Hashem bekerev ha'aretz. You'll know that I am God in the midst of the land. In other words, that I'm able to micromanage events in this world. Not just that I exist, not just that I can do plagues, but I have a degree of control over how the plagues work out. Well, the Seder ve'achav, Nemar od inyan yoser mizeh. When it comes to ve'achav, there's yet a third concept which is conveyed to the Egyptians. L'man teidak ki ein komoni b'chol ha'aretz. In our pasuk, it describes that the purpose of these plagues, again, the Maral is understanding that it's not meant simply to describe Barad, but that Barad is the first of the last set of plagues, and, you know, what's going to be described about Barad is true of all the plagues as a whole, or the last set of plagues as a whole, the Be'achav. You should know, based on these plagues, that there is none like me in all of the land. Not just that I am God, not just that I'm God in the midst of the land, but you should know there's no one like me in the midst of the land. Klomar, ki b'seder adash, ohayinu yodim rakshu b'kerav ha'aretz. The previous plagues just established that there is a God, and that he has control, but we didn't know that God is unparalleled. Now, again, Baruch Hashem, we live in an age where, you know, monotheism has basically been accepted by much of the world. So we associate the idea that there is a God who can do things with the idea that there's no rival to God. But certainly in the ancient world, just because you could establish that there was a God who was capable of performing supernatural miracles, didn't therefore lead to the conclusion that there isn't some other God out there who can also do supernatural miracles, and maybe can make supernatural miracles even to a greater extent than the first God. In other words, just because you show that Yudkei Vavkei, that Hashem Yisbarach, is a powerful deity, maybe Cholila, there's some other powerful deity out there. But up until we got to the seventh plague, the idea that God would be the only one, you know, and that he alone ruled over the entire universe, that wasn't necessarily conveyed by the plagues. Good. All right, so you have a God who can make a cattle plague. I'll get my God, and he'll make another plague. You know, another, how do we know that only God, you know, is that only the Ribbono Shel Olam is the only one, you know, the only contender? Ulefikach, kasher hevi alem ve'achav, makos muflaos shlohayu me'olam, hayu me'idin she'en komohu od. One of the things that's brought up by the Pesukim about the last makos, you know, the last four makos of the Achav, is that they had been unparalleled both up until that point in history and were unparalleled after that point in history. Right? In other words, these were unique, they were unique makos. So, by Barad, for instance, it says later on in Pasuk Ches that Asher lo haya kamohu, in Iman Tirko Ishmachar Bari Kaved Ma'od, Asher lo haya kamohu Yisrael lo hayom yivasto v'yad asa. I'm about to bring a plague of hail that you never saw the likes of ever before in Egypt. Well, the other makos, you know, hey, so, you know, maybe in theory, you know, water had turned into blood at earlier points in time. We see that, you know, it strikes us as well, but the Khartoumim, you know, had no problem changing the water into blood. The Khartoumim had no problem producing frogs. But Barad of this nature had never been seen before. Again, the Barad was not just hail. It was hail that had fire in the midst of the ice. It was a unique phenomenon. With regard to the Arba as well, with regard to the locust that we read about in Exodus Parsha, the Pasuk emphasizes that there was never a plague of locusts like this, and there never will be another one afterwards. There was something unique about it. Choshech seems to entirely be unique, you know, though it's not spoken about in the Pasuk, the notion that there could be a week long, with a, you know, a week long period of darkness, you know, certainly something that had never been seen before and has never been seen since. And the Makkos Becharos as well, you know, again, is described as something which, you know, was a Tsa'aka in Mitzrayim, was a crying forth in Egypt that was unique. So these last four plagues had a certain uniqueness about them that the earlier six plagues lacked. The earlier six plagues were tremendous demonstrations of God's power, but they weren't demonstrations of God's unique power in quite the same way. Okay, God can make blood out of water. The Egyptian magicians can even make blood out of water. So, you know, that doesn't necessarily establish, you know, unique powers that the Ribbono Shel Olam has. Here, the fact that these plagues were considered to be in a unique category by themselves, never duplicated, you know, established Ein Kamoni B'chol Ha'aretz. There is no one like me in the rest of the world. Right, so I think the Maharal would explain it as follows. The purpose of the Chatzumim initially trying to mimic the plagues was to show these are not God-given plagues, they're a trick. Right? They couldn't mimic, you know, you're right, after Kinnim, from Kinnim and on, they couldn't mimic them anymore. So they said, okay, it must be God. So, okay, we the Chartoumim can't mimic these plagues. But some other God, some other deity, could mimic these plagues. You know, we'll call on some other God to produce Arov, Dever, and Shechem. They tried, you know. I mean, you see, we're in on a little secret. There is no other God who can mimic, you know, Arav, Dever, and Shchit. Right? But maybe they tried. Maybe they tried and it didn't work out. Right? But you know, in the back of their minds, they said, look, you know, maybe if we would have tried a little bit harder, we could have found, you know, the right God who would have, for the right price, he would have brought, you know, Arav, Dever, and Shchit. But once they had Barat, Arba, Maka, you know, Choshech, and Makkos Becharos, these were such unique, unparalleled, unmimicked, you know, makos, that, you know, everyone has to admit, you know, the God who's performing these, you know, has no equal. Ein kamoni. You know, there's no one else like the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what they brought out. Lusikach mechalik Rabbi Yehuda makos v'gimel chalakim tetzach hadash ve'achalachem kimsa v'pirish v'akosov. Right? In other words, that's why Rabbi Yehuda divides the makos into these three sections, because they really are qualitatively different as you go from unit 1 to unit 2 to unit 3. And again, the language of the psukim, l'man teda, what am I trying to establish? I'm trying to establish ki ani Hashem b'kerech ha'aretz. I'm trying to establish ki ein kamoni b'chol ha'aretz. The language of the psukim speaks to the different educational element that each unit was involved in. So therefore, it concludes the Maral that the reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu over here mentions the Makkos Becharos, which was the starting point for the Maral's discussion, is because he's not talking about Barad, but Barad is now issuing in, or ushering in, I should say, the last unit of the Makkos, which will culminate with Makkos Becharos, And these plagues in their totality will show, Bahur Tedaki in Koloni Bechol Ha'aretz, will teach you that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is unique and no one is quite like him. Okay, so that's, again, it's just a very, you know, interesting take on the division of the Makos into three different sections, which ultimately explains this Rashi as well, and, you know, helps us understand it without having to change the Nekudos and make it from Makos Bechoros into Makos Bechoros, you know, the way that some of the Rishonim were suggesting. Right. It wasn't as complete as the Choshech, but nonetheless, it was, you know, tremendous. Right. Right. It's a good aura.
You see this? Okay, you'll see.
Right. Particularly because, you know, in the ancient world they worshipped the sun as a god. The fact that the sun had been extinguished over the course of three makos, you know, was significant in establishing God as being in a unique category by himself. Okay, we'll pick up that Hashem next week, and I wish everyone a good Shabbos.